October 21st, 2014. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. I like looking into Grandpa's Book of Spells.
Oh, that's a great place to look. There's always something exciting there.
Either that or you can go to the other side and ask Grandmama.
Well, you know what? I think you're really bringing us back to the Halloween season.
It's still October. We got a couple more days to Halloween, 10 more days. I'm getting so excited. The weather's changing. The trees are changing color. And I'm watching some creepy TV shows.
A couple weeks ago, I was saying, we haven't had peak fall. Nothing's really changing. And all of a sudden, this last week, the temperature just dropped right down.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we've got these beautiful reds and these beautiful golds. And the trees that have like this fluorescent orange look to them. So it's happening.
Yep. One of my favorite times of year. I watch so many creepy, fun things. I like the creepy and fun horror movies, not those gory, awful things.
Well, I think you hit on something. I certainly don't like watching someone being tortured.
Right.
And that is just, many of the movies we have right now really are, they're sickening as far as what they're I'm not saying that as a judgmental type thing. You may enjoy that type of fantasy. But to me, it's not my favorite part.
So we get to our film at 11 today, and we've decided today is going to be kind of special. We are going to look at a couple of our favorite sitcoms.
Oh, yes.
Those creepy, funny, interesting characters from the Addams Family and the Munsters.
Oh, I love both of them.
I love them. I can watch those forever.
Okay, we first should start off by this was not our childhood. We did not watch First Run.
Correct.
We watched these, if you watch them like I did, in the afternoon, or like someone would watch The Simpsons today during the weekday, kind of like the 6 or 7 o'clock show.
On those channels that we had on TV that weren't the network channels, on those local channels, they bought the syndication rights to these shows, and they showed them ad nauseum.
Exactly.
I've seen so many of these. I've probably seen every episode of both of these shows.
I have probably seen every episode of The Munsters. I have seen many of The Addams Family. Because The Munsters seemed to show more in my area, which was North Carolina.
The interesting fact is both of these shows ran at exactly the same time. They both started in 1964. They both finished in 1966. They both had two seasons.
Which is amazing also. But it seems like that they wanted children's shows. And this would be the equivalent of maybe Disney or Nick at the time. Because these shows are, when I say are gentle, there is a part to for children that's probably, they're taking it flat. I mean, this is what it is. But for adults, when you watch it, you see just how twisted and kind of silly the whole thing is.
Oh, they're very silly. They're silly sitcoms. That's what they are. The idea of the situational comedy. You take a normal situation, something that would happen in real life, and you twist it 90 degrees and go, ha-ha, look, this is different from your normal life. And these shows did that very well.
And we've got two different types of families, too.
Mm-hmm.
We have the aristocratic Addams Family.
The old money, sitting on a pile of money. The house is got a vault downstairs that's full of money. They don't know what to do with themselves, so they do these outrageous things.
Totally eccentric.
Absolutely. that you wouldn't do because you're not that aristocratic.
Exactly. And then we have the Munsters, which is the blue-collar family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Homer Munster has his lunch pail, which is just massive.
Enormous.
Lunch pail.
Right.
And, you know, they come home to this. It certainly is a mansion, but it isn't a mansion in the same sense that the Addams Family.
It's only a mansion in the idea of the haunted house. It's that scary, imposing-looking edifice.
And they, both of these shows used a lot of style.
Mm-hmm.
And they had different styles, but they were both very stylish. In fact, if we looked at many ways the Universal Monsters gave us the language of these horror movies, they took that language, they brought it to the 60s.
The Munsters. We're talking specifically the Munsters on that one.
Yeah, the Munsters. But, you know, Addams Family had some of this, too. But they were based off this comic strip. But they took the ideas that we had from, say, the 40s, and they brought them up to the 60s, and then they put them into, you know, a situation comedy.
So they're very similar in that. Charles Adams did those comic strips in the 1940s and 1950s in the New Yorker with this family called the Adams family, and that's where that TV show comes from, is from the 40s and 50s. The Munsters comes from the Universal Monsters, the Dracula character, the, mm-hmm. the Frankenstein character, the Wolfman character, the Bride of Frankenstein, and that's where those 40s and 50s turned into 60s sitcom.
Well, what's got to be amazing about these shows is how easily, so these, they only ran two seasons.
Isn't that something?
So they made, I'm sure they made some money, okay, as far as these actors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they probably did well,
mm-hmm.
but they got typecast right after.
Yeah,
it.
They did.
And it was very difficult to break them because they, their characters were so tied to their person.
Right. Right. And we did see all of those actors go on to do other things. Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked already about Al Lewis. Grandpa Munster ran for office, and he ran for office as Grandpa. So, yes, that's typecasting.
He almost should have changed his name to be able to get on the ballot as
right.
Grandpa.
Right.
Well, Al Lewis, later on in the 80s, he was doing basically what Elvira's doing, introducing old movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because he had a very difficult time trying to find other characters to play.
Fred Gwynne, of course, did so many other things other than the Munsters, but he always had that big, giant head, no matter what he was doing. Did you say two Utes?
That's right. From
my
cousin
Vinny.
My cousin
Vinny, that's right.
What they did real well in the 60s is, when you think of Leonard Nimoy, you find, like, he sang the Hobbit song. Every mm-hmm. once in a while, you run across that. And it's just so just bizarre, odd. Well, Fred Gwynne, he had a music career too.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was singing in every actor was like super universal. Like, this is Fred Gwynne tap dancing, and this is Fred Gwynne. He's got a song of singing his favorite Mel Torme songs. Yeah, you know, an album of that. It was very interesting how they marketed their artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it was very similar to maybe how today the Disney Channel markets their artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the person has a television show, they've got a CD out.
A book deal.
Correct. Yeah. All of a sudden, we want to know everything about the person who plays the latest Hannah Montana character.
Yeah.
And my kids are wrapped, well, I've got young kids, they're totally wrapped into that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just seems very...
And to be fair, here we are 30, 40 years later still talking about these actors and these characters. So
sure.
We were pretty wrapped into this as well.
Yeah, but we weren't first generation. We were the second generation.
True.
And so in the 60s, one of the things that the Munsters had was that automobile, that hot rod.
Right.
And it would show up at, you know, I think they had two of them. One was a casket and one was this, I don't know.
A hearse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it would show up at car shows and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that certainly wasn't me. I mean, I wasn't born yet.
Right.
But in the 70s, when they were just begging for any type of programming, so Sunday mornings we got Tarzan, mm-hmm. and during the week we got the Munsters.
Right.
This was good for us. I mean, it's good when I say wholesome. There's nothing in any of these shows where a person should be scared.
Right, right. These are monsters, but they are monsters living a normal life where they are, like I said, living that sitcom existence.
Where the regular person considers themselves ugly.
Oh, don't you love that? Don't you love that? Cause...
That's from The Twilight Zone, where...
Oh, yes.
That one show where you never get to see the title character till the end.
Right.
And everybody's got these bizarre looks.
And it's Ellie May. That's right.
Oh, Ellie May.
That's right.
Which is, you know, if we think of the Beverly Hillbillies, it did the same thing, but they used hillbillies instead of the Munsters.
That's the sitcom. That's the concept of the sitcom. Normal situation turned 90 degrees. Ha ha, it's funny.
Oh, yes.
that's how it works. Some of my favorite actors have been in these shows. I love John Astin. John Astin is still around. He's 84 years old.
Oh, he's amazing.
He is an amazing actor. He's been in so many great things. A lot of times poking fun at his original Gomez Adams from the 60s, but not always. I actually saw him live on stage 10 years ago when he was 74, and he was doing a one-man show, a biography of Edgar Allan Poe, called Once Upon a Midnight.
Oh, that's very awesome.
It was brilliant. It was I was so wrapped in this character that he was presenting of Edgar Allan Poe.
Now, was this downtown Chicago?
This was not. This was in the suburbs.
Okay.
And he was touring, and it was John Astin. You could see John Astin in it, okay. but you forgot about it being John Astin, and you could see this man is Edgar Allan Poe. Okay. He's telling these stories. He's got such great presence.
Okay, I agree with that. In fact, he played a great Riddler in the Batman series.
Absolutely.
So, from the 60s, by the way. So he is a very, just a jovial, fun, very upbeat type of presence mm-hmm. when he's in the shows. And he played a great Gomez.
And, of course, the other great Gomez from the 90s was Raul Julia.
Oh,
he did such a great job in the 90s doing that same character, being that same amazing actor that could make us forget about everything else that he's done and put us into that character.
Now, the movie, mm-hmm. Raul, was probably more true to the character of the strip.
Okay.
I just think that the casting of the movies was so good.
I love those movies. Christina Ricci as Wednesday, she shined as that character. As much as the little girl from the 1960s was cute and she was there, she was such a secondary character. In the 1991 movie, Christina Ricci was so perfect and so deadpan with
She owned that character, baby.
Absolutely.
Well, they did such a good job at creating the sets, creating the costumes for these guys, the casting. The first movie probably didn't live up to all the other stuff I just described.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the strongest of the movies. I thought Family Values was stronger.
So fun.
But both of them just had this beautiful presence. And what I wanted to mention was at the beginning of the Addams Family movie, which you can find on Netflix, was there's a scene. You're wondering why this movie starts off with they're singing Christmas carols.
Right.
And so they're all singing Christmas carols, and they're introducing the characters through the words. You know, this is who's playing who.
Then the camera pans up perfectly, and we see Wednesday and Pugsley up on the roof.
They're all getting ready to pour boiling oil over the carolers. And you're saying, well, that's just cruel.
Yep.
Well, that came from a Charles Addams strip.
That is straight out of the strip. Yep.
Oh, and so what it was immediately just going back and looking at that strip. And the strip was equally as, you know, when I say odd, it had a decorum to it. Mm-hmm. And it was true to its decorum.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, all the stuff you saw in the television show and in the movies, they really did capture this world real well. But it would be something, the strip would work something like, it's a miserable day outside. And the other would reply, oh yes, perfect.
And that is repeated so many times. These characters have been used so many different times in so many different ways. There's the animated series that was 1992 to 1995. It actually ran longer than the original 60s series.
Did it really?
It did. The movies, Addams Family, Addams Family Values, Addams Family Reunion, which was 1998. Unfortunately, after the death of Raul Julia, Tim Curry took up the Gomez Addams role.
Well, I love Tim Curry too.
I love Tim Curry, but Tim Curry is so Tim Curry. Every time I see Tim Curry, I go, oh, look, there's Tim Curry. I don't do that with Raul Julia.
Right.
I don't do that with John Astin. He's Tim Curry.
Okay.
You know, he's Dr. Frankenfurter, and you go, oh, look, there's Tim Curry again.
Or he's the gentleman who ran the hotel in Home Alone 2.
Right. And you go, oh, look, Tim Curry. So,
oh, we love Tim Curry.
The 1998 movie wasn't all that great. I could certainly see skipping that one. Then there was the new Addams Family, which they tried to do that, and it didn't.
Was that from the 70s? Oh, no, that was a television show.
That was a television show in 1998.
Oh, I remember seeing that and not even...
Not even batting an eye, yeah.
That's too bad. I mean, I think there's a place for the Addams Family. I think that it works well in small doses. And to prepare for this, I actually sat down. I watched a number of the Addams Family shows, and I watched a number of the Munsters shows. And as much as I enjoyed them in the sense of nostalgia, I wouldn't say that I should, you know, oh, you should watch the season of the Addams Family. It doesn't work that way. It works real well in small doses, and it works well in your memory. And I would say the same thing with the Munsters. It works well in small doses, and it works well in your memory.
So that brings us to a new project that I just found out about. There's a young lady in Los Angeles named Melissa Hunter. She is producing a web series called Adult Wednesday Addams.
Oh, how cool.
And she is doing an Indiegogo right now where she is looking for funding for a second season. She finished her first season of this show. It's very small, 3-4 minute vignettes of what would Wednesday Addams look like in LA in the 21st century. It's so perfect. She looks the part. She has that same Christina Ricci deadpan delivery, and it's so funny and perverse.
Well, of course, that's what the perverse, not in a naughty sense, perverse in a and not a normal sense. Oh, wait,
exactly.
I'm sorry. What you would see in every day.
Right. In that sitcom 90 degree sort of fashion. Oh. She's really good. I hope to talk to her about it in the coming weeks because she has something going on with that. A 3-minute small dose mm-hmm. is excellent.
We have so many great actors. We have so many great writers. We've got set designers and stuff like that. They get to LA mm-hmm. and they don't get the job that they want to immediately. So what we get are these web series.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of great ones out there. And I'm gonna see this. I wasn't aware of it until you mentioned it this morning.
Yeah.
So
we'll sit down and watch some of them. They're really funny. They're really fun. What we haven't seen, you and I, is the musical version of the Addams Family, which is still touring, by the way.
It is touring.
It is touring. It does exist. I don't know that big of a dose of the Addams Family is something that would work.
Well, I think it could work in a musical setting.
Mm-hmm.
I tried when it first came out, I can't remember, it was 2 or 3 years ago. I decided, oh, you know, Wicked did real well.
Right.
Why wouldn't the Addams Family? And I tried to listen to the music. Usually it takes a couple times to get the true vibe of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't capture me.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that I'm right on this. It didn't capture me at that time.
It's been touring for about 5 years now, so it's out there.
It tells me that somebody is connecting with this
right.
music. And obviously the Addams Family is a fun place to kind of play with it.
It is. Huh. It is. And I think it would be a natural for a musical.
Well, music has played a big part in both of these shows. When we talk about the Addams Family, we're talking about Vic Mizzi. And Vic Mizzi, I mean, if you think of that harpsichord and kind mm-hmm. of the playfulness. We all know the Addams Family, you know, song.
Those theme songs. Back to that again. The idea of a theme song. The Munsters, too. That has a great theme song. And music plays such a big part.
Now, that's Jack Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Played with Jack Sheldon. You may know Jack Sheldon from Conjunction Junction, the Schoolhouse Rock. But you may know Jack Sheldon from the Merv Griffin Show. Or Jack Sheldon from just being the coolest of the jazz players. So Jack Marshall was in the scene at that time, and he played this guitar. I have a Vic Mizzi CD of the Addams Family music, and I found it when CDs originally came out. They were kind of producing a lot of vinyl. They were moving over to CD.
Mm-hmm.
I never could find Jack Marshall CDs, and or one from the Munsters, which I was looking for. There was one that was out, but I never could get a copy. It was probably a limited run. But if you go to Amazon now, there's only one Jack Marshall CD listed, and it's selling for like $45, $50.
Hmm.
So he played on a lot of other albums, but we all know one of his songs, Peggy Lee's Fever.
Fever!
Where it's just the banging drums and the snapping fingers. So he definitely had sort of that California cool vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Each show had its own vibe, but each musician at the time had a vibe too. And you knew Vic Mizzi's vibe when he was playing on the Addams Family. And you knew what was going on with Jack Marshall when he played on the
And again, monsters. How interesting is it that they were running at the same time? They started the same year and ended the same year. These two very similar and very different shows, and there they were on CBS and on ABC.
Well, they were competing against each other.
Right.
So, I mean, it's perfectly reasonable. The Batman series during that time, I think, ran against the Green Hornet on another channel.
Okay.
I'm just taking a guess. They could have run on the same channel. But it's not uncommon to have a genre do real well. You know, NBC has Friends, and then, you know, all of a sudden they have Couples, or, you know, over on the other channel.
Right. As we said, the Addams Family story has continued. There's so many other Addams Family things that have come out since the 60s. The Munsters had a share of remake movies too. Munster Go Home, the 1966, right out the gate of the TV show, they made that Munsters Go to England show, Munster Go Home. Munsters Revenge was 1981. That was a real attempt to make that happen. Where
was this a different cast?
No, that was the same cast.
It was
the same cast.
Now, this was Color, right?
Color, 20 years on.
All right, so let's mention this real quick. During the 70s,
mm-hmm.
77?
1977.
All right, Addams Family had a Halloween special.
Yes, they did.
That was filmed in color.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought back Vic Mizzi to run the music, and Vic Mizzi had evolved. The music had changed a little bit, although he had some of the spirit, but it certainly wasn't. It was filmed in color.
All the original cast who were still alive, except for the actress who played Grandmama, was very sick at the time.
Yes.
So she was not a part of it. But everybody else that they could find came in 1977 and made this special.
They had a beautiful sets.
Mm-hmm.
They had beautiful costumes. It didn't work as well. I'm gonna be kind to it as well.
Yeah, and I think there's two reasons. I think you're right. The music was different. The 70s vibe versus the 60s vibe was different. And I think the film quality, being in color, first of all, and it kind of had a home video quality to it.
It did.
Like one of the kids was filming it.
Well, it wasn't shaky or anything. It just didn't have... The black and white led to the spirit of the show.
It gives it a class.
And the movies did real well.
They did.
Okay, so they were able to recreate the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was different from the 60s show and different from the cartoon, they were able to create it. The television program from the 70s did not.
It just didn't have okay. It.
So let's bring it to the 80s. We're looking at the Munsters. The Munsters was a color.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that instead of, you know, we are told that that Fred Gwynne's character is green, but mm-hmm. we never see him as green.
Right. We have to imagine him as green. He's kind of an off gray.
Correct.
Because it's in black and white. We always have to imagine him being green, but boy, seeing him in green face is so jarring.
Yeah.
It's so weird, and it's hard to get past that.
Sure. And all of a sudden, it looks more makeup-like.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the challenges, and I'm really surprised that they haven't made a movie about this. I'm talking about a big-budget type of movie of the Munsters.
Well, they did try to bring back the Munsters in 2012. There was that pilot that was filmed called okay. Mockingbird Lane with Jerry O'Connell as Herman Munster, which was very strange, and Portia de Rossi as Lily, which was very strange, and Eddie Izzard as Grandpa, which was very strange.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting casting. What really worked well with the casting from the 60s was with Lily, they had Yvonne DiCarlo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she was beautiful, one,
oh, yeah.
And she had a whole career before. I remember watching an interview where they said if she took the job as Lily, she needed the money, because many of us do at times, but they said it would be career suicide, and mm-hmm. it probably was. She had a very tired time overcoming that,
right.
Because we all knew her as this Lily Monster character, even though she had this long career beforehand.
Right.
But she had a glamorous part to her. There was a, I'm using the word decorum too much, but there was a presentation that she had that many times we're not getting from... We're a very casual American society now.
Yes, we are.
And what I mean by casual, there's not a formality that we use in working with each other. And at that time, things were much more formal. And I could be wrong, but they just looked more formal. So the characters had a way of presenting information or how of holding themselves. And I think that may be one of the difficult parts of recreating the Munsters right now, because which body of actors are we going to pull from that's going to come across with the kind of formality she had?
And you don't really always want to have that same degree of formality in our society now. You know, the Tim Cook comes out on stage and his shirt's untucked. You know,
absolutely. I see that part.
That is our society right now. We don't all wear suit jackets and fedoras to work every day. Well, okay, I do, but most people don't.
We all don't go to the football game with in our suits with a cap on. I mean, think of Tom Landry from the 70s versus a football coach today.
Rex Ryan.
or I'm thinking of, things are much more...
informal.
Informal. We have a different type of uniform. That would be a different way of saying
that's a good point. We do have a certain uniform. T-shirts and jeans are the uniform of the 21st century so far. And of course, the Addams Family and the Munsters, they were all very well-dressed. Even more well-dressed than the other characters in the sitcom, because they were so separated from these people. And that's what you're doing by dressing for the situation.
Sure.
You are a part of this community. These characters were outside of the community. Everybody was terrified of them.
Well, that was always the big joke.
It was always a big joke.
Who was going to date the daughter, or sorry, the cousin.
Right.
And they would come to the door and immediately scream and run off. And, you know, she would sit down and go, oh,
I'm so ugly.
They're all leaving me. And she's the beautiful one. the running gags are always hilarious. You know, and Grandpa's always dressed in this tuxedo.
Very universal monster, very Bela Lugosi Dracula.
Exactly.
Oh, very formal. Funny. It was a different time. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, they did a good job.
Young Frankenstein is one thing that we haven't talked about yet in our talk about all these universal monsters. Young Frankenstein is 40 years old this year.
That's crazy.
In 1974, it's celebrating its 40th anniversary. And boy, that's one of the movies that if I'm flipping channels and Young Frankenstein is on, I'm stopping. Everything else in my life is stopping. I'm watching Young Frankenstein. That doesn't happen nearly as much as it used to.
Well, in fact, I was trying to figure out when it was released, because I would not have seen it first run. While I was alive, I certainly wasn't appropriate for me at that young age.
I was less than a month old when it came out.
So we all saw it in a different way. I can't even remember when I first saw this movie. Probably on television?
I think on television. I think that's the answer. I think, again, those syndications, those burgeoning industries of local television where they had to fill the air with something. Sure. I think that's where I saw it first.
Which gave the birth of It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it was free, or virtually free.
Or as cheap as it could possibly be, right. So they showed that ad nauseum.
So when I was reviewing to kind of talk about this, I wanted to understand whether, you know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, when that was put together, versus this movie, The Young Frankenstein, because I said, well, was Gene Wilder just running on a, just having a hit, you know, a hit after hit after hit after hit?
He had a great career.
He did. And no, Willy Wonka was 1971. And so I remember seeing that, and I probably first saw that on, during the weekdays, during the summer. They would have movies. You could go to the movie theater, and they were like a buck or whatever.
Okay.
They show at 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, we have VCRs, or I'm sorry, we don't have VCRs. We have Blu-rays now, or we have on-demand.
We have digital downloads. I'm not taking out a DVD for anything anymore.
And while they still may have shows during the summer or during holidays that you can go watch at the theater, Those are just novelties versus this was really the only way you could see some classic movies when in my youth. And so this was, you know, Willy Wonka was 1971. This is 1974. And then we had Stir Crazy. That was a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But what an exciting career for Gene Wilder at that time. And he seemed to have a great movie every year.
Yeah, he had a great run in the 70s. He's still alive. By the way, Gene Wilder, he really has slowed down quite a bit, but you'll still catch glimpses of him here and there.
And that seems like a shame. And I don't know a lot about what Gene Wilder's doing, but he's very much, to me, he's probably an intellectual, kind of John Cleese-ish.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly would be if he had a hobby. John Cleese is the best at, like, I have a hobby. I think I'd like to do an hour-long program on it. I want to tell you about how to drink wine.
Yeah, okay. I think you're right. I think Gene Wilder would make a great host for something like that.
Oh, yeah. He's like, well, let's talk a little about let's bring about the Affordable Health Care Act.
But he just doesn't seem to be interested in that. He just seems to be sitting back and resting on his great success and his name from the 70s. Young Frankenstein is such a fun movie.
Isn't it Frankenstein?
Oh, good point. Young Frankenstein. The fun part about it is all of the comedy in Young Frankenstein is from the original 1930s Universal movies. That's where the comedy is coming from. They are making fun of, satirizing those 1930s things. All the serious parts come from Mary Shelley's original novel. It's a great, there's some great interviews out there.
Okay.
And one of them is Mel Brooks talking about exactly how he wrote this. And that's what he did. Whenever he needed something funny, it was from the 1930s ridiculousness. And when he needed a serious, dramatic scene, it was taken directly from the original Mary Shelley.
Oh, I might have to rewatch this.
Oh, it's great. And I'll show you some interviews, too, because those are fun.
Well, I think they did such a good job because it was filmed in black and white.
And that was a style choice because Willy Wonka was in color in 1971. Three years later, they made that style choice. And it's huge.
And Mel Brooks went through, you know, had a run of hit movies also.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this was one of those of many.
One of many. I've got the whole collection. I do on Blu-ray. I've got a whole Mel Brooks collection.
Only the best from Mr. Fodor.
That's right. Spaceballs. Blazing Saddles is another one of those that I will stop in my tracks if that's on TV.
Oh, yes.
Love that.
I watched that one with my father. My father took my brother and I to the theater. That must have been a re-release.
Probably.
And we all laughed. We laughed together.
And it's so inappropriate. And there's so many racist things in Blazing Saddles. And it's hilarious because they're not being racist. They are making fun of racists. They are saying, look, things have changed. And we treat each other very differently now. And Blazing Saddles was a story about treating people the right way. Looking at people and not worrying about that.
And I'm going to mention this real quickly. This last summer, when we were watching the World Cup, and when you're watching the World Cup, they don't split off for commercials. You're watching the commercials around the field, and almost every other ad was fight racism.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, as much as we may be able to say something about the United States not being the perfectly integrated area, and not liking people who are different than you or something of that nature. We certainly are farther along than many places in the world because we don't have those types of ads going on in NFL football games. We don't have them going on in NBA games.
Right.
And when we see something like Sterling's, the LA Clippers type of event happen, you know, we immediately go, oh my goodness, how could someone say like that? Or we justify it in the sense that, oh, he's, you know, 80 years old and he must have been from a different time because we certainly wouldn't want to communicate with another person like that. I mean, it's amazing how liberal our society has become.
Right.
And how far we still have to go. I mean, what can I say?
That's right. We get to our And Now the News. Hey, Chip, guess what comes out today?
I don't know. What?
Snowpiercer is coming out on Blu-ray today.
Well, we need it on Blu-ray because you need to have a perfect copy.
The good news? It's a two-disc special edition packed with extras.
Well, we want more extras. Does it come with your own Jell-O?
You have to have...
Do you have the black Jell-O?
Some black Jell-O, please. The black Jell-O packaging is where we need to go.
In fact, it should. It should just come wrapped with black Jell-O. Or, you know what? Don't do that. No. Make your own.
Make your own black Jell-O.
Make your own black Jell-O.
Have a Snowpiercer party.
Cut it into great big rectangles. You know, as you're watching it, just pick one up and just eat it.
Those of you who haven't listened to our Snowpiercer episode where we sat down and watched Snowpiercer, it is my favorite episode of this show so far. It's the most listened to episode.
Is it?
Over 600 people have listened to that because it was so ridiculous. If you haven't seen Snowpiercer, I don't suggest that you go out and buy a Blu-ray copy of it.
Oh, I do. In fact, Snowpiercer has been sponsoring this podcast for years.
Apparently it has.
Well, let's get back to Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer was definitely not made in the United States. Wasn't it Korean?
It was a Korean film.
Okay, so there is a way of looking at it. It was based off a French comic.
Right.
It just...
From the 80s.
From the 80s. There is a... the idea that humanity has gone away. We all get on a train that travels around the world.
And that's how we save ourselves.
And the poor people live in the back eating black Jell-O.
Right.
Made from bugs.
Made from bugs. Where they get the bugs is never explained. They just have bugs. Just
well,
do it.
You know, that's just the only things that can survive. You saw Alien.
But they're on a train. Oh,
and then geez. And then we look out and we see that somebody had tried to escape once and they were frozen out there.
Right. Oh.
Well, anyway, I'm glad it's come out.
If you want to hear more Snowpiercer talk, go back to that episode because we got through the ridiculousness on that one pretty well.
I have a feeling that would be a great Geek Bar type of presentation because it is, I think there's going to be a cult classic part of this.
I don't think so.
Oh, I do. Because I'm not thinking today. You got to think in
maybe
the future.
Maybe in Korea.
Oh, come on. Somebody's going to sit around eating black Jell-O and just...
Reminiscing about the good times.
All right, let's use the Geek Bar on this. So the Geek Bar, you know, the chef is out there making these black rectangles. He's added special fruits into them. You can get the black plain one, or you can get the one with the beautiful nuts in it, and all these fruits in it.
Or
you can get the one. I learned something. A friend of mine basically was describing. All right, so at their church, if somebody gets sick, they bring this kind of lime Jell-O mold. It's like in a bundt cake mold. Are you familiar with this?
Sure.
Okay, but so it's lime Jell-O.
Sure.
And it's got tuna fish in it.
Oh.
And you should look this up. This is a real meal. And she was saying that, yes, that they deliver these things. And you take them in and you eat them and you smile about them. And by all means, if you're hungry and stuff like that, Jell-O's good for you. Tuna fish is good for you. We don't usually think
I'm
about
not sure
all these
the combination,
things together.
Yeah.
Oh, and I looked it up, and it is a real food. During the, going back to the 50s and 60s, when we were all trying to make these fancy foods, they had people, chefs who worked for Jell-O, working up different ways to introduce Jell-O into your body.
There you go. The other piece of news this week, kind of important, CBS is finally getting into the streaming TV game. They are rolling out their own separate CBS TV app with a subscription rate of $6 a month to finally get your CBS programming streaming.
Yeah, this is going to fail.
I think it's going to fail.
This is exactly what Netflix was, and by all means, I'm not saying this to support Netflix,
mm-hmm.
but CBS needs to go through Hulu. And what they need to do is they need to fight for what is a proper amount to pay
mm-hmm.
for this. So if it's really $6 a month, or is it $9 a month?
Right.
But the idea of splitting off all the networks, and you're going to spend $6 to do it, I'll tell you how it's going to work. you're going to bring out your season of blah, 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 whatever the latest CSI. CSI
Elgin. Boise.
So you're going to bring it out, and I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to watch it, and then I'm going to cancel.
Yeah.
Because I just cannot see spending, you know, $6 a month on Hulu, you know, $9 a month on unlimited Amazon reading,
mm-hmm.
You know, another $15 a month for streaming Netflix and this and that. And
which brings us to our other news story of the week, which is HBO is planning on doing the same thing, bringing out their service standalone from cable. They've been trying to do this for years, mm-hmm. that they will sell you access to their programming, and they haven't come out with a price point yet, but the speculation is somewhere between $15 and $20 a month for just HBO.
That's going to fail too.
For the same reason. Because the Game of Thrones fans are going to pay their $15 for the month that Game of Thrones is on. Maybe the 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
They're $30. And then when that series is over, they're going to make that service stop. Because that's what they're paying for.
They're going to binge, watch, mm-hmm. and then cancel.
Yep.
And the better model for that would be to go through Google Play or iTunes or, you know,
even Hulu,
whatever, and basically charge a premium. Mm-hmm. In fact, Hulu would be an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's $6 a month, but if you want the Game of Thrones,
it's another $10.
It's $10 for this month, and you have a month to watch them all.
Or, like you said, through iTunes or Google Play, buying that season for, say, $25 is still cheaper than 2 months of service from HBO at $30.
Now, we should say that we're in the infancy. They're testing the waters.
Absolutely.
Because when they test the waters, the big one's going to be when ESPN says, listen, you're going to be able to buy us.
Mm-hmm.
Because ESPN will, you know, right now on a Saturday, they're probably running 30 college football games. I may be overestimating. 15, whatever they're running.
You could tell me that they were running 100 football games. I wouldn't know.
All right. But you know, you're from, you know, I'm from North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and I live in the Chicago area. And let's just say that I want to watch, you know, one of my local teams. Duke plays Wake Forest. Well, I can say that that's probably not going to do real well in my area. But maybe it has interest to me. So I want to watch it. Well, to have the ability to do that will be pretty amazing. $6 a month for CBS. I'm sorry, there's just not enough there. There's not enough. Even though I don't watch most of Netflix, mm-hmm. even though I don't watch most of Amazon Prime, it just seems like that it's there.
Their catalog is there. Their library is there. When you want it, it's there. CBS, it's America's number one network. It is the most watched network in America, just not in the Chicago area because of reception issues, because of programming issues.
Well, I'll tell you how this could work for CBS. Now, CBS also owns TNT.
Mm-hmm.
They own TBS. And they own, what's the third one? True Television.
And Showtime.
And they also own... do they own Showtime?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wasn't aware. They also own CBS College Sports, which is CBS Sports Channel. Or CBS SN. They've got a new name. So CBS SN. They and so they also have SEC football. So where this could also play is that you're paying $6 a month and you have access to their all these other channels along with it. And why that may be important. In fact, I just thought of it, why it's important. It's important because this coming spring, the NCAA championship, the basketball championship, the men's basketball championship, is going to be airing on TBS or TNT.
You could tell me that it was on XYZ. I don't know.
It doesn't matter. It's not going to be on free television. And if you want to watch the NCAA basketball tournament when they have 50 different games going on at the same time,
mm-hmm.
at the beginning, that first couple days,
you need cable.
That's right, and this could be part of that, and I would say that it would be easier not to charge $6 a month to basically charge a yearly fee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna use an example. You know, if you want $6 a month, you charge $72 and charge it up front, and then they'll have access to it, and you get all these are the goodies that come along with it.
Yeah, unfortunately, the $6 a month is only for CBS, and they are not going to do any live sports. That's the first thing that people asked about this service was, is it live and is it sports? And the answer was no and no.
Yeah, this is not going to work.
It's not going to work.
As special as they think they are.
Because they are America's number one network. They really feel like they can sell their product to a wide range of Americans, and a wide enough range of Americans will pay that $6. And maybe that's true.
And I'll just say that they're very special, just like everybody else.
That's right. The other news of the week, Android is releasing version 5.0. They're calling it Lollipop, and it's going to come out in the next couple of weeks. So who loves your baby?
All right, so I love the idea of using candy as the name of their releases. But for me, as an outsider, because I don't use Android, it's very difficult for me to understand which one comes first.
They are alphabetical.
Oh, they are?
Yes. So this is version L.
That's the reason why they have KitKat.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. The world has opened up for me.
The epiphany has finally happened, and Chip understands Android a little bit better. But the other piece of news this week, of course, is Apple has unveiled their new line of iPads and iMacs and Mac Minis. They came out with a whole line of new things this week, kind of a surprise to everyone. The biggest news, in my opinion, was the new iMac has a 5K display.
That's amazing.
It's gorgeous.
That is amazing.
It's even better than those 4K TVs that you're seeing in the showrooms. I mean, Best Buys lately. This is a 5K display. The picture is fantastic, and they've done so many new things with the physics of how they're doing it. It's more energy efficient than even our HD TVs.
Well, I think this is one of the areas that Apple does real well, and that is taking their computers. They recognize their computers and trying to make them more energy efficient. And that gives longer battery life mm-hmm. and things of that nature. The 5K part, monitors have always been, because of necessity, they've always been clearer than televisions.
Correct.
So, you know, and when we're looking at a 27-inch monitor, it certainly isn't a 32-inch television or a 60-inch television.
True.
And I don't know if our eyes truly can see that much a difference, but all I can say is, holy cow, things are getting, they love us. Everything gets better.
And Apple's monitors have always been better than everybody else's monitors. They've always been on the forefront of making the most beautiful displays.
Well, style has always been one of them, and also, I mean, the performance of them. Mm-hmm. They've never played in the budget-minded market.
Nope.
Except, I mean, the new Mac Mini is at $499.
It's $100 less than the previous model.
Okay, but if we got a Windows version of that, we're probably looking probably a little less than that.
Yeah, about $300 for a small unit that could do the same functionality.
So we really are, I mean, you're paying a premium.
So I think that we've probably gotten enough information for one day. I think we have all the information we need to survive another week. We talked about our favorite sitcoms from the 60s and all the movies that came after those sitcoms from the 60s. And I think we can survive another week, Chip. What do you think?
I hope we can survive another week. That would mean I can come back again next week.
That's right. Come back every week. We'll get more information.
And we should probably mention this. If we didn't do a book this week, so we suggest going on the web, just finding a bunch of old Charles Adams cartoons and reading them.
There you go. That's a great way to do it. If you need more information, you can always contact us. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You can find us everywhere, especially in front of the TV watching some old 60s sitcoms.
Oh, how wonderful.
Thanks for tuning in again to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hesse-Fleisch.
We'll see you in the future. What I wanna think of, what I wanna